Hear God's word to us this day from Paul's letter to the Galatians in the fifth chapter. Paul writes, "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. If, however, you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another." May God bless this reading and the hearing of God's sacred word. A confession. All week long, heart-wrenching headlines and nerve-wracking news updates have mocked my sermon title, have drained some of the hope for this morning's message that I held so high. At least that's the lens through which my late-night ruminations have been interpreting yet another week in the unceasing storm that is our current context. As Yeats wrote, things fall apart. The center cannot hold. So it seems. In such a time as this, how do we who profess trust in God and seek to follow the way, really follow the way of Jesus Christ, how do we live faithfully in the world? Which convictions will guide our way forward? What hope will shape our decisions and our interactions? Is there even a common to the common good? Is there a common thread that might knit us together in this moment? As you know, these are not abstract questions, not now. Neither are they new to people of faith in the 21st century. Indeed, the words we've heard from the prophet Jeremiah come from a letter that was written to the community of God's people in exile. So the prophet is addressing his own people whose hope had faded, whose God seemed absent. Things had fallen apart. They were exiles in Babylon, strangers in a strange land. They had been removed from everything they knew, forced to live as second-class citizens in an empire ruled by the powerful authoritarian king Nebuchadnezzar. In such a time as this, the prophet writes. In such a time as this, the prophet speaks the word of the Lord in a series of utterly astonishing orders. In this hostile land, God commands the exiles to build homes, to plant gardens, to celebrate marriages, to raise families. Prophet calls people of faith to make this broken, fallen apart world their home. Jeremiah summarizes this divine message with a tidy, succinct, pithy challenge that speaks across generations of the faithful. The prophet uses one of those Hebrew words that you will no doubt recognize. Seek the shalom of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf. For in its shalom, you will find your shalom. Any reader of Hebrew will tell you that shalom is far more than peace. Shalom signifies completeness, wholeness, welfare, well-being. And according to these prophetic words from Jeremiah, our shalom, the shalom of the community of faith, depends on the shalom of our city, our nation, our community, our polis. It's a powerful call for believers to serve the common good with acts of love and justice and compassion, even in exile. And we must admit, we must own the fact that it's more than a little surprising to read these words in the context of exile. One might assume that the command of God through the prophet Jeremiah would be something like, keep yourselves pure and uncontaminated by the outside world. Erect a barrier between yourselves and the world beyond, and make sure that the community of faith is undefiled by the sins of the Babylonian Empire. Or perhaps turn inward and care for each other. Look out for one another. Don't waste your time on the shalom of the Babylonians. They care nothing about you. The message of the prophet is unambiguous, abundantly clear that there is much that the Babylonians and the exiles hold in common. The prophet makes it abundantly clear that their futures are woven together. This is how God intends it to be. And so these millennia later, as followers of the same God, Second Presbyterian Church is commanded to seek the shalom of the community in which we find ourselves, to pray for its shalom, for our futures are woven together. In this way, I am moved by your commitment to this neighborhood, to this city, to this community. I am moved that 3 days each week, because of your vision and generosity, there's a line of cars that stretches across our parking lot, and faithful volunteers who greet neighbors with warm hospitality, kind words, and bags of grocery that will sustain their families in trying times. I am moved that through existing and deepening partnerships, students and teachers from local elementary schools will receive vital support from our congregation to make sure their vocational work can continue in our literal midst. I am moved by how many of you participate in habitat builds and serve families experiencing homelessness through Family Promise and support refugees newly settled in Indiana and give generously to support the diverse ministries of a congregation that sustain hope and shape faith. And of course, in more ways than I could possibly enumerate this morning, the members who are Second Presbyterian Church make mission a part of your lives Monday through Saturday. I see you. I hear your stories. Your vocations of compassion, care, leadership, and service. How you seek the shalom of this community in concrete and powerful ways. As individuals and united as one community. Thanks be to God for your commitment. Seek the shalom right where you are, the prophet commanded the exiles. Don't wait for another time or dream of another place. Start right now, right here, seeking the wellness, the wholeness, the healing of your community. Our call begins right where we are, to respond to the needs and live our faith in our own neighborhood. This summer, the session of your congregation convened task forces to help us focus our efforts on the local mission partnerships and the call of our faith to racial reconciliation in this moment. Trusting and confident that this work is essential to the purpose of the church. You'll be hearing more from each of these teams in the weeks ahead, for at its heart, the call to active discipleship is a call to those in our literal midst, those with whom we share so much in common. But this morning, I would suggest to you that our call does not end there, and so our work must not stop there. The shalom we seek is more than sustenance, more than simply ensuring that our neighbors' basic needs are met one week at a time. There is, I think, a broader obligation that has been placed on our shoulders. The theologian Reinhold Niebuhr perceived this back in the 50s, and he wrote these words: "When we talk about love, we have to become mature, or we will become sentimental." Basically, Niebuhr wrote, love means being responsible. Responsible to our family, to our civilization, and now, by the pressures of history, toward the whole universe of humankind. People of Christian faith are called to the responsibility of love. This responsibility must not be limited to individual acts of service or deeds of charity, certainly not simply to warm feelings for one another. It extends into our communal life, yes, into our civic engagement. In at least this way, the message of the gospel is unapologetically, persistently political. That is, it is concerned with the polis in which we live. For we profess both faith in and allegiance to the God of all creation. And that faith, that allegiance, supersedes all other commitments when we confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. In a dangerous time of division, the Apostle Paul wrote powerful words to the church in Galatia. He said, You were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Indeed, we know that freedom itself is a concept that originates in the very mind and heart of God. God, who calls us out of darkness and into light, out of captivity and into liberation. Those same exiles are one day freed and returned. But Paul's words do not stop with a celebration of our freedom. We who follow Jesus must keep reading. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. You see, without humility, without responsibility, freedom quickly gives way to pride, to arrogance, even to domination. Christian freedom hinges on fidelity to the law of love. Christian liberty must be tethered to Christian love. Why? Because the common good, the shalom of all, depends on it. Last Sunday, I observed that we live in an age of ideological antagonism. The capacity for complex thought or genuine dialogue are seen as signs of weakness in this age of shouting smug insults. I voiced my hope that the church might be a place where a civility born of reverence dictates our interactions. And this week, I want to suggest that we, people of faith, can be those who seek a common good deeper than self-interest, broader than personal gain. For our futures are woven together as surely as the shalom of the exiles depended on the shalom of the Babylonians. We who believe in the universal claim of God's grace must take on the responsibility of love. This morning I'm aware of the privilege it is to speak to people of deep commitment. The privilege it is to speak to you who are committed to the way and truth and life embodied by Jesus Christ. I'm grateful for the chorus of voices I hear each week encouraging me to preach with passion and challenge us all to deeper faith. And I'm deeply gratified by your willingness to move beyond your comfort zones with open hearts and minds. The well-worn phrase suggests that I am preaching to the choir, and I'll accept that as basically true. But this particular choir, this particular community, has the capacity, and I would suggest the obligation, to have a profound effect for the common good of those around us, especially the neighbors we may never meet, whose shalom is impacted by our action or inaction, by our speech or our silence. Here's my honest, heartfelt conviction, and I certainly include myself when I say it. We must do more to seek the shalom of the place where God has placed and called us. We must confess that too often we have privileged our own comfort above the needs of others. We must confess that many of our literal neighbors have been excluded from the common good that we are called to seek for all. For in the community of faith, we proclaim that our shalom depends on the wholeness of those around us. In his letter from a Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King called this an inescapable network of mutuality. And my favorite phrase, a single garment of destiny. If the suffering of even one of God's beloved children causes all of us to suffer, as Paul writes, what are we doing to relieve this suffering that has us all in its grip? These are questions our faith compels us to ask, even or perhaps especially when doing so will challenge our assumptions or reframe our perspectives, or ask more of us than we would prefer to give. One of those discouraging pieces I mentioned earlier referenced a term I'd not heard before. I wish I still hadn't. The term is lethal mass partisanship. It's actually a technical term that describes a willingness to justify actual violence against one's political opponents. And though it may be a technical term, it is no longer a hypothetical one. What does fidelity to the law of love look like in a time of lethal partisanship? How do we together begin to envision a path toward the common good for all who share this one garment of destiny? Today, I'm preaching my 100th sermon at Second Presbyterian Church. It's day 850. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to leave town and stay away for 4 days. I'm going to turn off all my devices, shut down all my screens, I'm going to quiet the cacophony in my head and I'm going to pray. I'm going to pray for myself and those I love. I'm going to pray for you, for our church, for our city, our nation, and the world. I'm going to ask God to open my heart and empty it of what I no longer need to carry and fill it with what I need most for the next chapter of this journey. You see, for me, and maybe for you as well, a gradual realization has worked its way into my heart, and it is this: that the volume has been turned up way too high these days. So I'm going to seek silence. Try that for a little while. I hope to hear again that still small voice drowned out by so many other voices, whispering that the responsibility of love toward those with whom we share a future is the heart of our faith. And so if you're feeling hopeless these days, if you are angry, afraid, if you're coming apart at the seams, here's a suggestion. Turn down the volume. Quiet the shouting. Silence the voices that are not serving you well. Instead, follow the word and the example of the one who came as servant of all. Listen for his voice. Reflect on his will for your life. Invest in God's work in the time and place you have been given. Do something for someone else. The date was March 4th, 1861. The occasion was Abraham Lincoln's first inaugural address. In the time from his election to his inauguration, 7 states had seceded from this our union. It was a moment in American history when it seemed unlikely at best that that fragile partnership could endure another 4 years, though the only enemy in sight was us. Does it sound at all familiar? I can imagine that day, the partially completed Capitol building still in construction behind him. I can imagine that the words he spoke were received by some in the crowd as a futile gesture, perhaps even pitiful. For after all, it was just words. A thimble of water thrown on a raging fire. But Lincoln chose those words carefully to describe the responsibility of love. By the grace of God, they set the course that held our nation together. I am loath to close. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break the bonds of affection. For the mystic cords of memory stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land will yet swell the chorus of the Union. When again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. Can we take on this call in the days ahead to summon the better angels of our nature, to bear in our words and actions, in our decisions and our interactions, the responsibility of love, no sentimentality here, for our futures are woven together. That single garment of destiny we all share. May God give us the courage to pursue with passion the shalom of our community and the common good of all God's beloved children. Amen.